Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hey, everybody, I'm Charlie, an alcoholic. And I only say that because I am. I'm not here to impress anyone, and I don't know how to do that. I have three great fears in my life. One of those fears is the fear of success, because if I do it right, then I got to do it all the time, and I'm not good at doing it all the time. Another fear is a fear of failure. Been a lot of times I've sat on a bar stool and I've said I got that close. I was that close, man. But I didn't finish it. My greatest fear is the fear of exposure. If you really knew who Charlie Gow was, you wouldn't even let your dog play with me. Now, that's what I thought before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And Larry Boy and I get to travel around quite a bit. And it's through him that I get to go places like this. I know that, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due. He's not only my best friend, he's my mentor, he's not my sponsor. But there's nothing I can't say or do or feel that Larry doesn't say, do, and feel. We're kind of hooked, and we like it like that. Now, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to know what I'm supposed to do behind this podium. I know I'm not supposed to force myself on you. I know I'm not supposed to criticize you. I know I'm not supposed to moralize or lecture you or talk down to you like I'm on some kind of spiritual hilltop. My book of instructions tell me that. Now, what it really tells me I'm supposed to do is, in my own words, show you I have established and created a relationship with my God. In my own words. So this is Charlie Gow's story. It's got nothing to do with anybody in here. I don't know the man in here who has the worst rap sheet. I don't know which one of you guys have killed the most men, or stole the most money, or dealt the biggest drugs. I would be scared of you if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. But there's not a man in here I will not pray with. There's not a man in here I will not cry with. And what I have seen during my short time here, you let me in too. And there's not a man in here that won't let me cry with him. And there's not a man in here that won't let me pray with him. Now, when I got here, my vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. And God and Mother was in all of them. Until a guy showed me one time, do you know what that is, Charlie? Do you know what cussing is? I said, well, no, it's just the way I express myself. He said, Charlie boy, cussing is a crutch for conversational cripples. And I said, this is Charlie's story. This ain't nobody else. And don't take it that way. But I said, well, I don't know what to do about that. And he said, well, maybe you just want to listen to somebody who's got a little bigger vocabulary. Just a suggestion. I know I'm supposed to be sober, in my right mind, and fully clothed. Yeah? That's what I'm supposed to do when I get here. This is a humble place. I didn't put this suit on for me. I put this suit on for you. Because I respect you. You're taking time out of your life to get to know Charlie Gow. Some old dumb Georgia redneck from Savannah, Georgia, you're going to give a part of your life to for the next few minutes. This says this is a hallowed place. so I should conduct myself in that manner. That's what I was taught. I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that will keep you sober. I do know it won't get you drunk. I've been behind it long enough to know that. I have never left this one of these events and said, "Dadgum, I need a drink." I've always left saying, "Thank you, God. Thank you for taking the words and just using me as a vessel." And I did that before I got here tonight. I'll do a little house cleaning. Now, I'm a hill walker. I'm a smoker. And I dare any non-smoker, especially a ex-smoker, or the smoking police, to walk up there in our little pen and find so much as an ash on the ground. Now, I don't know where the ashes go, but you can eat off that little piece of concrete, asphalt up there. And you know, we don't put any conditions up there. We're huffing and puffing and talking about sobriety and talking about God. And we're plenty comfortable in our little hog pen. So we're in our little hog pen, but I just want everybody to know so you can go to bed with a clear conscience that them dadgum smokers up there is ruining everything. Now, I have seen a couple of bottles and a couple of cups and some chewing gum wrappers and some M&M wrappers in the non-smoking areas. I don't know what the police are doing. Maybe they're just watching us. But you're wasting your time, Hammer. You know, I figure if our two co-founders can die of emphysema, by George, I would have the right to, too. So I'm going to hang in there. You know, I got to speak at my partner's, his home group's anniversary a couple of years ago. And everybody asked you when you the speaker? Yeah, I'm speaking. You nervous? Well, yeah, I'm about to lose bladder control. But Larry's group, when they have an anniversary, it's 500 or 600 folks there. And I was standing there, and this pretty little old lady, she said, "Oh, are you the speaker?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." "Are you nervous?" I said, "Nah, this don't bother me a bit. Not a bit." She said, "Really?" I said, yeah, it's cute. This don't bother me." She said, "Then why are you in the ladies' restroom?" I'm combing my hair, I guess. I don't know. But I walked in there and there's a women's restroom. That's where I was supposed to go, I guess. But it is an honor to be here, guys, and I thank you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart to let me spend some time with you because I'm telling you, 99.9% of the guys sitting in this meeting is not here because you're afraid you're going to take a drink. We're in here because we're not drinking. And not everybody's going to relate to Charlie Yow's story. I've been here long enough to know that, too, and that's perfectly all right. Because my story is for the Charlies out there who can't quit drinking. That's exactly what's wrong with me. I just can't quit drinking. Doesn't mean I don't want to. I mean, that gets me in here. But somehow, I have lost the power of choice when it comes to drink. One of the greatest things that's helped me in my sobriety, I have quit asking why. The muse in the ditch. Let's get him out. So I asked my God, how? How do I do this deal? Not why I do this. Now, 90% of my drunkalogue's hearsay. And, I mean, I've got some certified documents from some Superior Court judges and some divorce attorneys that say, yeah, you really did that. And I've got papers. But that's not what got me here. I'm one of these guys that wasn't a bit more born an alcoholic than I was a Republican or a Democrat. My book tells me that if I'd never took a drink, all this stuff would just be theory. That's what my book says. I had 13 and a half years of continuous sobriety. And then I turned 14. And kind of went downhill for 3 decades, you know. But it's December 3rd, 1993, and I'm sitting in this 7x9 jail cell. And I get the greatest revelation I think I've ever had in my life. I wasn't thinking about it. It certainly wasn't the first time I've been in there. But it just came to me like a revelation. Charlie, you can't quit drinking. That's exactly what's wrong with you. You can't quit drinking. And there was a little peace and ease that actually came with that. Because I don't know if it ever happened to anybody here in California, but people started putting conditions on my drinking. Now, I'm a union iron worker. I'm a structural welder. I can weld anything but the crack of dawn and a broken heart, baby. I know something about welding. I'm a good welder. And people would request me. But they'd say, Charlie, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Man, you reek of alcohol. You get hurt on this job, they'll lock us down. You can't come to work drinking like that, Charlie. And that pint of scope you just killed out in the parking lot ain't helping nothing. You can't come to work drinking like that, Charlie. Don't come. Now, I've been doing public work since I was 15 years old. And so help me, I can stand in front of you gentlemen and tell you I have never been fired from a job. But I sure have been laid off while they were hiring. Now, I don't know how that works, but it does. And that one kind of gets your attention a little bit is, you know, Charlie, you're a friend of mine. You're a good friend of mine. I consider you a friend. We're having a little get-together this weekend, Charlie, but don't come back to my house drinking anymore. Your jokes aren't funny anymore, Charlie. And your intimidation doesn't intimidate anyone anymore, Charlie. You peed my azalea bush for the last time, dude. I don't even want you playing my dog. Don't come back to my house drinking anymore. And that will stop you dead in your tracks. Charlie, just don't come home drinking anymore. Please. I made my bed. I guess I got to lay in it. But, Charlie, I can't answer that 6-year-old boy's questions anymore. Those questions that, Mama, how come my daddy don't love me? Mama, how come my daddy won't play with me? Joey's daddy plays with him. How come you and daddy fuss all the time, Mama? How come daddy has to work all the time? Dadgum, I got to go to bed before he gets home. And he's gone before I get up. And why is it, Mama, when he sees me, he says, this weekend, partner, is just you and me. Just you and me. Whatever you want to do, it's just you and me. But it's Saturday, Mama, and he's gone. Or he didn't even come home. Charlie, just don't come home drinking anymore. Well, I got a little walking around sense. And I saw the handwriting on the wall, and I said, okay, all right, I quit. And I quit. About 2 months later, I quit again. About a month after that, I quit for good. About 2 weeks after that, I quit. So help me God, I quit. And it's December 3rd, 1993. And I'm in this jail cell, and I realize I can't quit. Guys, all I've done is stand here in front of you and took step 1A. That's what all that talking's about. I have stood in front of you and my God and took step 1A after almost 18 years of continuous sobriety. If you wake up every morning and decide whether you're going to drink or not drink, my hat's off to you. And there's some people that can do that because they will tell you that. Today I decide I'm not going to drink. By George, I ain't going to. Good for you. I believe you because you say you can do that, that you have that power to do that. All I ask is don't look down your nose at us Charlies who can't quit. We would like to have that power, but we just don't have it. Don't ostracize us because we're powerless over alcohol and for some magical reason you're not anymore. Just give us a shot too, okay? Just give us Charlie's a shot. Well, it's around the holidays in 93, and I don't know. I guess down there in Savannah, they're getting ready for the Christmas crowd. I don't know. Somehow, I got me another lawyer. We got ourselves arraigned, and they cut me loose. And I ain't free, but I'm loose. And there's a big difference between being free and being loose. And I know it's just a matter of time. So I go to my house, and house is the appropriate word because I'd sure drink the home away. And I go in that bedroom, and I lock the door. And I ain't coming out, and nobody else is coming in. And I do things that might have some in this room has thought about. It don't make for good telling, and half the people don't believe it anyway. But I'll put it like this. Procter & Gamble is yet to invent a mouthwash or a toothpaste that can get the taste of brown and gun oil out of your mouth. Now, that's been almost 18 years ago, and I can taste it every time I say it. And I hope I never forget that taste. And I did something that night that I hadn't done in a long time. I said, God, come. God, just come. But God, I need you to come. God, don't send Jesus. Because where I am is no place for children. God, I need you to come. And I was able to sleep that night for the first time in a long time. Next morning, I got up and walked out in the kitchen. My wife was standing there at the counter. And she said, I didn't expect to see you. And I said, well, I didn't expect to be here, to tell you the truth. And I know what kind of trouble I'm in. And I know all the promises I've promised you. But I got to go get a drink. I am dying. I have got to have a drink. And that didn't seem to bother any. And I'm serious as a heart attack. And she just kind of taken it with a grain of salt. And she reached on the counter and she set this book up on the bar. And I looked at it and I said, what's that? She said, well, that's a book, Charlie. I know it's a book, but Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never seen that book. She said, I know. I've had it a couple of years. I said, well, I've never seen that book. She said, well, I know that too. I had it in the bill drawer. But I opened this book up, and it had this little inscription on the jacket of it. And it said, the words in this book will bring you peace. And the words in this book will save his life. When he's ready, I'll be there. May God bless you and keep you to then. David Schaffner, April 1991. Now, I don't know David Schaffner, and I don't know Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I'm going to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about God blessing people. I just know something's got to be done. And she said, Charlie, if you can hang on for an hour or so, we're going to go see somebody. I said, I don't know if I can hang on another 10 minutes. She said, I'll never ask you again. But if you can hang on, we're going to go see somebody. Clancy up the road talks about alcoholism being a disease of perception. And what I'm about to share with you is what was going on in my head. I don't know if it was real or unreal, but it was what I was hearing. Again, I'm not telling anybody's story but Charlie Yow's. This is what happened in my head. We pulled up in front of this building and went and sat down in this little room, and this guy came in with a clipboard. Sit down, introduced himself, and said, I'm the assessor. I said, the assessor? He said, yeah, I'm here to assess you. Well, I don't really know what my net worth is. So I figured it's kind of like giving a dying man an enema. It can't hurt, you know. So we'll just get right on with the assessing. He said, Mr. Yow, do you come from a broken home? I said, yes, sir. He said, tell me about that. I said, no, I'd just soon not talk about that. He said, no, you just misunderstood. Just when did your dad leave? I said, my dad didn't leave. My mama did. He said, well, tell me about that. There's no reason to talk about that. I don't want to talk about that. So he made a little note on his clipboard. He said, I see your particular age group. You got a military background? I said, yes, sir. What branch service you in? United States Marine Corps. What years? 1966, 1972. Oh. You seen in combat? Yes, sir. Tell me about that. We don't talk about that, mister. No. He said, now we're just not getting it. I said, mister, I don't even know you. I'm not going to talk about that. So I made another little note. He said, well, tell me about your family life. And I said, well, I reckon we got our ups and downs. A bug flew in her mouth or something. Boy, she got the gagging and the coughing. He went and got her a drink of water, and he didn't ask me to talk about that. He just made another little note. He said, Mr. Gow, do you drink? I said, yes, sir. How much do you drink? Well, I'll drink a six-pack now and then. He said, now that sounds like a lie. I said, it is a lie. Thank you, my friend.
You're welcome.
I said, mister, it's a bald-faced lie. Mister, I drink all I can drink and all I can hold all the time. It's got to be one condition and one condition only in my drinking. I got to be at least semi-conscious. Other than that, I drink all I can drink and all I can hold all the time. We made, compiled his notes, looked at my wife and said, well, I think we'll just keep him. She says, good. She gave me a little peck on the cheek and they just buzzed her right on out the door. They didn't buzz me out the door. Again, this is what was going on in my head. And they took you in this room, man, and they strip you everything but your Fruit of Looms. And they give you this dress to put on, kind of like an apron. I mean, you can tie it in front or tie it in the back. It don't make no difference. You're going to be embarrassed. Then they give you these Unifoot slippers. They ain't got no bend in them. You can wear them on your right foot or left foot. Don't make no difference. Unifoot slippers. And son, I don't know what it is, but you can hang meat in these places. And they said, you all right? And I said, well, I'm kind of cold. And he brought out this fishnet looking thing. It, like what your grandmother crocheted. You know, 12 count shrimp go right through them holes. And I'm standing here in this dress and these Unifoot slippers and this fishnet. And I'm thinking, now this ain't what I had envisioned. And I'm a great visionarier. Son, I can have these two-sided three-hour conversations and I'm the only one in the truck. I'm a great visionarier. I come from a long line of visionaries. We're from Tennessee. And my Uncle Buck was a great visionarier. Buck was a logger. Old Buck, he'd get in that Tennessee spring water and he'd start walking the roads. And Buck always had this log chain with him. Everywhere he went, he had this log chain with him. People say, Buck, what were you doing dragging that log chain around? Uncle Buck would go, you can't push a log chain. It just ain't what I had envisioned, see? Well, they put you in this room, they come by and they feed you out of these styrofoam bowls and these plastic spoons and pop you with one of those silver bullets every now and then, keep you from falling apart. About the third day, they send you upstairs for a medical examination. And I'm sitting on this cold table, my dress, my Unifoot slippers, my fishnet, and walks a doctor. Now, he's an Indian doctor. I'm not talking about an Apache or Cherokee. He's an Indian doctor. Not that there's a thing in the world wrong with it. I'm not prejudiced about that. But with his broken English, he's trying to explain to me what he's getting ready to do. And with my broken English, I'm trying to understand the procedure. And he washes his hands real good. And he grabs one of those one-fingered latex gloves and a jar of petroleum jelly and turns around and grins. And I said, now, Doc, I don't know what's wrong with me, but where are you getting ready to look? It ain't there. He said, yeah, but this is part of the procedure. And I said, well, it ain't part of this procedure. He said, well, you just have to go get observed and some more. I said, shoot, you go assess me some more. That dog ain't going to hunt here. But I make great progress. And within a week, they got me out in general population. I mean, I'm out here in this big day room in my dress, my Unifoot slippers, my fishnet, trying to find myself. And they said, well, today you go to group. I said, group? See, they don't give you a manual when you walk in these places. Now, I don't know what group is, but I'm sitting in this room with all these guys. And walks this guy. I don't know who he is. He's the counselor. Counselor? Well, what's the counselor do? Well, a counselor deals in issues. Man, I'm sitting here in a dress. I ain't got no issues. But he's going around the room. It's one guy about the third time he's been in there. He keeps failing his drug test at work. He thinks they're just picking on him. And that counselor says, well, that's a real issue. We'll deal with that. And this other little lady got to get her meds adjusted because the pool man don't show up on time. And the clock and on that Volvo won't stay right. And her neighbor's dog keeps pooping in the yard, and she's just a mess. He said, that's a real issue. We'll deal with that. He got to me, and I still ain't come up with a good one. He said, well, just why are you here? I said, oh. Well, I can't quit drinking. And so help me, guys, it was just like that. Just a hush came over the room. And I guess he learned it in counselor school. Because he said, oh, no. Now, it is true you have a biochemical genetic disorder affecting the hyperthalamic information control center of your brain. It seems me and Jeff that the hydroxide forms acetaldehyde that combines with dopamine producing tetraisoisocholine and you lose control. I said, no, sir, I can't quit drinking. Well, I ain't even ready for group. And I'm back out here in the day room. And over there in the day room, they got this little bar over there in the table on against the wall, with a sliding glass door on it. And all the guys in the dresses and the unifoot slippers and the fishnets lined up against the wall over there. Well, I ain't the sharpest pin in the cushion, but I figured that's where I ought to go. So I'm right over there in line. This little nurse slides that glass back and sets this Easter basket up on the counter. This Easter basket got all these little cupcake holders in them. All these cupcake holders got all them little jelly beans in them. Every kind of jelly bean man think of. She had them. And you stay orderly. She just serves one at a time. And she got to me and she looked at my chart. She said, well, you can have two of them, one of them. So I took two of them, one of them. Gave me a little shot of orange juice, washed it down with. I said, what do I do now? She said, well, you go to group. I said, they just kicked me out of group. She said, oh, honey, they won't kick you out now. I'm back in group. Now, it seemed like an eternity. It couldn't have been that long. But, son, somebody found a thermostat in that place. And the boy, the temperature started rising. Off come the fish net. I got this dress hiked up. And I get this second revelation. My daggum feet don't work. And I'm thinking, maybe I got my unifoot slippers on wrong. And I get down to get them off and I can't get up. And walks the counselor. You want issues? I got one now, Bubba. My daggum feet don't work. He didn't think that was an issue. It was working when I come in here. It ain't working now. It's about the next 2 weeks, I'm wearing out unifoot slippers left and right because I can't get my heels off the ground. But one day I'm standing in front of the bar, and the little nurse says, you can't have none of them, and one of them. So I took none of them, one of them. Went to group. Counselor wants to talk about issues. Might have one. Yeah, what's that? You know, if I could get me a pint of that wild turkey, I wouldn't need those four pills you just took away from me. Because that's the only thing I've found that's removed the obsession for me to drink. Now, it makes your feet not work, but it ain't like you're going anywhere. Guys, so help me God, I am not making fun of these institutions, and especially the people who work in that field. You are angels of mercy, and God bless you all. But it was just like nobody would hear me. I just can't quit drinking. Can't somebody talk to me about that? I just can't quit drinking. And it was like nobody would hear me. I'm sure maybe I wasn't ready. I don't know. But one day I'm in the big doctor's office. And he said, we can't help you, I don't think. Besides that, your insurance is run out. But we ask you how you feel, and you say, with my hands, how do you feel? We ask you to get that stuff out about your mama, and you just clam up. We ask you to get that stuff out of you about that war, and you just dig yourself in a hole. We can't help you. I've played the game. I'm saying, what do you got to hear? What do you got to hear to put success on that chart so you can turn it into the board of directors and get another state grant? What do you got to hear from me, doctor? You want to hear about my mama? Is that important? You want to hear about that war, man? You got to hear the decibel sound of a 3-year-old baby screaming? Because you just shot her mama? Because she just handed the guy you shared a toothbrush with about 2 hours before something. And he's hollering, find my arms, Charlie. Don't you let them take me out of here without my arms. And I'm saying, I'll find them. I'll find them. And somebody's handing somebody else something. And everybody's dying. Even the baby dies. And they send you back to the world and they stand you on the stage and they pin a medal on your chest and they call you a hero. And you walk outside the building and they spit on you. And they call you a baby killer. I ain't no hero. I'm 19 years old and I've seen enough death the last 10 lifetimes. And I'm not a baby killer either. I just can't find his arms. I just couldn't find his arms. Is that what you need to hear? Man, all you've done is sentenced me to another year of nightmares. That's all you've done. Well, I'm wiping the snot out of my nose. He goes and changes his drawers. He comes back and he breaks out this prescription pad and he says, you're supposed you could be a picket fence, man. And you need extensive aftercare. And oh yeah, your wife said she wasn't coming after you. Your keys are up front. And God bless you, Charlie. God bless you. And I said, God bless you too, doctor. God bless you too. Now, the greatest thing that ever happened to me in that institution is they took me to my first AA meeting. It was New Year's Eve. And by this time, I was in civilian clothes. But I had this big orange armband on and no shoelaces. And they said, you can go if you want to, and if you want to go, you can smoke. And I said, shoot, I'm in. So they loaded us on a little short bus and took us over here at this auditorium, put us way up in the nosebleed section. And we all sitting there waiting for the smoking lamp to be lit. And this preacher gets up there and led the congregation in a prayer I'd never even heard of. And got some people to come up there and read stuff that didn't make a bit of sense to me. And then they stopped for a few minutes and got to fellowshipping. And we're up there huffing and a-puffing. And I look, and coming up these stairs, this long, tall drink of water walked right up to me and stuck out his hand and said, my name's David. How are you? And I said, okay, I guess. He said, I know you. I said, no, I don't think I know you. He said, that's okay. I've been where you've been. I said, oh, you out on bail too? No, I ain't out on bail, but we'll talk. And again, it was probably 500 people in that auditorium. And the best of my recollection, he is the only one that walked up those steps and stuck out his hand to the guys with the big orange armbands on and no shoestrings. The only one. And I didn't know why he did it then. I know today. I know why today. But I left that place, and up to this point is the last time I contemplated which way I wanted to go. Because if I pulled out of there and turned right and went about a block, I'd be right in front of a liquor store. That guy knew me better than anybody in Savannah, Georgia. He had it packed before I got there. He gave me credit because I was such a good customer. He'd let me forge my wife's signature on a credit card because I was such a good customer. Or if I turn left and went a couple of blocks and over at this building, I'd be over there where they're having that A&A meeting. Somehow I just turned left. Can't tell you why, I just turned left. And I walked in there and there's an old man that was sitting over in the corner. And he looked right into the bowels of my soul. And he said, what's your problem? I said, I can't quit drinking. And his old face just lit up, man. He thought he won the lottery or something. And you know what he said? He said, I can't quit either, son. That's why I'm here. Welcome home. And I've been to a lot of meetings. I hear a lot of stories. And I believe every one of them. And if you think about it, about 90% of the stories is the last place I wanted to be was in Alcoholics Anonymous. Good Lord, you talk about scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, dadgum bunch of Jesus freaks and some kind of cult, and I'm just waiting for somebody to bite a chicken's head off. And I ain't about to drink that coffee. It's got to have that Kool-Aid in it. Oh, I didn't want to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, that's your story, and I respect and believe your story. This is Charlie's story. It took that 5 seconds in lapsed time in history, that one statement from a total stranger, for me to know that I was home. It was just something that went clean inside me. And he took me into this other room, and we sat down, and some dude got up and led everybody in a prayer I didn't know the words to. And they read some stuff that made absolutely no sense whatsoever. And then they circled the wagons, and they got to talking. And guess what they talked about? Drinking. Not so much the physical act of drinking, but the solution you can find when you can't quit drinking. And it blew my mind. I sat right beside a guy who'd done 18 months on death row for killing a man in blackout. And I never felt more at home. And there was a girl sitting beside me who was too pretty to be an alcoholic. And she talked about giving her kids up and turning to prostitution to support her habit. And I never felt more at home. Now, I'm not going to get on a rant, I swear. But I'm telling you guys, I am one of the most fortunate people that ever walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because not the first one, not the first person in there insulted my intelligence. Not the first one. Maybe it doesn't happen in California, I don't know. But it happens in Savannah, Georgia. And it makes me want to puke. I'm glad this is my story and not your story. Because they'll see a Charlie walk in there that don't know which end's up. And they give them this profound statement. Well, you know, if you don't drink, you won't get drunk. Really? Yeah, you just don't drink. Really? Yeah, it don't matter if your hind end falls off. Just throw in a wheelbarrow and bring it right back up here and just don't you drink. Really? That's your solution? Dude, just hand me a loaded 45 and a bottle of Jack Daniels and I'll get out of your way. Because I have taken the wrong turn. You see, I know that. And I tell you the first time I heard it. I was 16 years old. And I'm looking through a 2-inch piece of plexiglass. My grandmother's on the other side. And she's saying, Charlie, if you weren't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff, you wouldn't be in here. And I'm saying, yes, ma'am, I know. Charlie, if you weren't drinking that stuff and doing that stuff and messing around them yahoos, I wouldn't be spending my retirement trying to keep you out of the penitentiary. I'm saying, yes, ma'am, I know. I know. For all the problem drinkers that call themselves alcoholics and Alcoholics Anonymous, trust me, we Charlies know. But we can't quit. If we could quit, we would. So help me God, we would. We have caused enough destruction on God's planet. We won't off the merry-go-round. So help me, we do. But we just can't quit. But nobody did that to me. And at the end of that meeting, they asked me if I wanted to join Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I sure do. And there was a black lady that met me halfway down the aisle. And she handed me this little white chip. Now, I thought somebody slipped out and made one. See, I didn't know we bought them by the pound. But she handed me that white chip, and she squeezed the color barrier out of me. She squeezed me like I was somebody. And she squeezed me like she was somebody. And she didn't ask me about my mama. And she didn't ask me about that war. She didn't ask me if I had a valid driver's license. She didn't ask me if my insurance was paid up. She squeezed me like I was somebody. And she squeezed me like she was somebody. That's Charlie's story. That was noon, January 11th, 1994. That's what I call my sobriety date. The last drink was December the 3rd, 1993. But sobriety through better chemistry, I don't think is exactly what they're talking about. So I call that day my sobriety day. That was noon. And I said, what do I do now? They said, at 5:30, we're going to talk about it again. You be here. 5:30, I came back. Guess what happened? They talked about it some more. I said, what do I do now? They said, 8:30, we're going to talk about it again. You be here. 8:30, I come back. Guess who's sitting on the front row? Had a long, tall drink of water, came up and shook my hand. Now, I got 3 AA meetings under my belt. $38,000 worth of therapy because I had such a good therapist. So I swandered on up to the front and I said, David, I need me a temporary sponsor. Son, it looked like I slapped him in the face with a dirty mop. He said, let me tell you something, Hammer. I don't do temporary. Did you come in here for relief? Or do you come in here for recovery? Now, I didn't know the difference in the words, but I knew the right word to say. And I said, I came in here for recovery. And he handed me a pamphlet on questions and answers on sponsorship. He said, you got a home group? I said, no, sir. He said, you go over there and tell that lady right there your sobriety date and you want to join the Savannah group. I said, my sobriety date's today. He said, then you probably won't forget it by the time you get over there. And he said, come on up here with me. So we went in this other room. He said, do you know what that is? And I said, it's a coffee maker, ain't it? He said, yeah. I'm going to teach you the integral workings of it. This is the filter, this is coffee, this is the pot. This is what you do. And there's four pots here. Anytime I walk into this building, if you're here, I ought to be able to choose which four pots I want to drink out of. I said, but everybody's outside talking. He said, you ain't got a seat out there. You in here making coffee. He said, and something else you're going to do, too. Everybody walks up here, you're going to say, it's really good to see you. I said, but I don't know anybody. He said, I didn't say that. You just tell them it's really good to see you. Now, I have held every service position my group has. I have been DCM of the district. I just rotated out as state chair of the Georgia Archives 4 years. I am still DCM of the Savannah Group. I am the designated coffee maker. And I am good at it. And every time on a Monday or Thursday night, if you ever get on the East Coast and you walk into 1501 Eisenhower, where the Savannah Group meets, you're going to see this old country boy standing beside a bun coffee maker. And I'm going to stick out my hand. And I'm going to say, it's really good to see you. And I'll mean it. So help me, I'll mean it. And I don't know if you just got your big orange armband cut off or if you got 40 years of sobriety. And so help me, it better never matter. It better never, ever matter. Something else they do in Savannah that I don't think is real cool. They'll tell one of us, Charlie's, you see, the biggest fear when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous was, what if this don't work? What in the world am I going to do if this doesn't work? But we'll see a Charlie walk in there that can't get his feet, his eyes off the floor. And we'll embarrass him and say, you're the most important person in here. And we automatically stick him in a barrel. Partner, you're not the most important person in here. I tell you what, come sit beside this guy right here. He's got 43 years of sobriety, and he just lost his soulmate a week ago. But he's in this meeting. We think he's kind of special. Go sit beside this lady who's got 38 years of sobriety, and she just came back from the doctor. It ain't a real good report, but she's here. We think she's kind of special. We want you in our family. Nobody's important in Alcoholics Anonymous because we're all special. We're all God's kids. Not one more than the other. I mean, our whole foundation is set on equality. Sure, we understand that you don't know the words. But partner, all you got to do is hold our hand and just listen to the music. Just listen to the music. And someday you'll know the words. And someday it'll be another Charlie walking here. And you'll say, I know you don't know the words. I didn't know the words. But just hold my hand. But you got to hold on tight, Hammer, because if you let go, we'll lose you. And we don't want to lose anybody if we can, if we can help it. Everybody's special in AA. Everybody. That's what I've learned. I got with that sponsor 2 days sober when I went to his house. And he kind of told me his story. We got to listen to a tape, I think. We got the book of instructions out, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I took step one, step two, and step three that night. I answered the questions. Don't take long to say yes or no. On two of them. Now, on the third one, this is how David Schaffner changed my life. He pointed out to me exactly what step three was. He said, Charlie boy, you're about to do the most selfless act a human being can perform. You are about to give yourself to your God. No more selfless act will ever, ever surmount that. And I'm sorry, we didn't talk about any frogs. We didn't talk about any birds on the wire. We didn't talk about any catching an airplane. This guy showed me how to become one of God's kids. You see, I asked God to come, and he came. And as soon as we're through, he said, now you got a real sponsor, Charlie boy. I have to work sometimes. Sometimes my phone goes dead. Sometimes I don't even answer it. But you'll never get a call waiting on this sponsor if you'll use it. And he showed me instructions on taking step four. And he's pointing out these defects of character. And I said, good Lordy, man, I got 1,000 of them. He said, nah, you got 5. I said, oh, no, David, I got 1,000 of them. He said, okay, for the sake of argument, you got 1,000. Why don't we work on these 5 that they're talking about in here and see where the other 995 fall? What do you think? He said, are you selfish? Well, I may lie to you, but yeah. He said, are you self-centered? Yes, sir. Are you dishonest? Whew. Yes, sir, I'll lie to you about what I had for supper. He said, are you frightened? I said, all the time. He said, are you inconsiderate? I said, yes, sir, just because I'm so afraid. He said, let's work on these 5 defects of character. And let's see what happens. Let's just see. Because if we don't work on these 5, we don't know. Already, Charlie, you've taken step 1, and I ask you to get honest. I said, yeah, I'm not lying to you no more. He said, that ain't what rigorous honesty is, Charlie. Rigorous honesty is being you, man. No sham, no scam, no pretense. Just be you. But you don't know who you are. No, sir. I got all the masks. I'll be anything you want me to be if I can have your approval. Because I'm so afraid. But I can't tell you I'm afraid. So I masquerade all this fear and violence and hostilities. I become a bad man. I become a tough guy. I was a tough guy. I become a biker. Well, I was a biker until I took these 12 steps. Now I'm a motorcycle enthusiast. But he showed me what to do. And I went home, and I was as fearless and as thorough as I could be. I went back in my life. He said, I don't want the first entry of Mary Sue calling you a little fat poopy head in kindergarten. That ain't going back. Charlie, what's eating your lunch today? This is where we are. You're supposedly rocketed into the 4th dimension, Hammer. You know where that is? No, sir. It's right now. This is your day, Charlie. You have no other. This is your day. Oh. So I did the best I could. And I did all that. And within 3 days, I was done, I guess. Heck, I wasn't 44 years old. But then I turned the page and I read something I probably shouldn't have read. Said this next step could be postponed. Well, I'm thinking, I guess I'll just ride this spiritual hilltop a little bit. And I got my little 4-step in my back pocket, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm making coffee, and I'm saying it's good to see you. Then one night David just turned around and looked at me and said, you know, Charlie boy, it don't have to be with me. But if you don't do it, you're going to get drunk. And he turned around and walked off. And I knew he knew what he was talking about. Our book gives us a few suggestions, a few choices you might can make. I'm not saying this is the way to do it. This is the way Charlie did his first one. I've done many more since then. But I went home and I called my best drinking partner. I called my best friend. I called my oldest son. And I said, Scotty boy, you need to come over here. We got to do some talking. So he came over and I tried to explain to him what I was getting ready to do. And he said, I don't understand, Pops. I said, I don't understand either, son. And I don't know if there's any clemency in this stuff. I just know I cannot live another day in this maximum security prison of terror. I cannot breathe this stale, musty air of bewilderment another day. And I can't sleep on this stone-cold, hard bed of frustration. And I cannot exist on these crumbs of despair another minute. I just got to do it. And I told him every despicable thing his daddy had ever done. And I did not list assets. For some reason, I don't think what few assets I have is blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. Just my opinion. I think these defects of character is what's eating my lunch. And we got through and he hugged me and I hugged him. And I went in the house and took steps 6 and 7. And he went and got drunk. That June, he got married. And my ex-wife and husband-in-law is coming down. And they're on the list. So after the wedding, I got them at the reception. I got them out in the front yard, so we got a little working room, you know. And I said, I want to take full responsibility for my actions, for all the heartache I put you through for all those years. And if there was anything I could do to change it, I would change it. But you just need to know, I know what kind of sorry SOB I was. And Don, I'm really, really sorry I broke your jaw on your own front porch. That just wasn't a nice thing to do. And she said, well, why are you doing this? And I said, well, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is something I just got to do to clean off my side of the street. She said, y'all got that chip system down here in Georgia? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. I pulled out my little yellow 6-month chip, and I gave her the whole lowdown, son. If you want to surrender to win. She reached in her purse and pulled out a 4-year medallion. Son, I was livid. I had to go to my sponsor about that. I'm standing here pouring out my guts to this hussy. I've been sober 6 months. She's been sober 4 years, and she ain't never said nothing to me. David give you that sponsor talk. Well, Charlie boy, looks like you didn't make the list. Now, there's a moral of that story. Within 90 days, if I continue to do what I've been doing, my home group is going to present me with an 18-year chip. And she's not even eligible for a white one. You see, I hear her. I hear in those meetings. You just don't drink. You just don't drink and come to meetings. There's plenty of time to take these steps. You just don't drink. She's pounding her fist against the bar and said, what happened? Where been all my high resolve? Guys, this is the reason Charlie Yao has to take these steps. On a continual basis. I looked at that step 6. And I thought I was this God. I guess there's only one way to do it wrong, and that's don't do it. But so help me, they put step 6 and step 7 right where they belong, Bubba. Because after I puke up my life in step 5, if I ain't going to be ready to have that stuff removed, I ain't never going to be ready. And I had that list, and I made those amends. And I continued to grow in step 10. And David showed me, step 10 is not only a walking around step. Step 10 is like taking a bath. It don't stay done. You know, you get up 6:30 every morning, take a shower, and you're squeaky clean. You go out to work all day and come back in. Guess what? You need another shower. Well, so are these spiritual principles. They need to continue to grow in your life, Charlie. And you need to be aware of exactly who the master is. And I understand that today. We got a big turmoil going on about court papers. I got a theory. I tell them, I'm bringing it over here, Hammer. I'll sign your paper. I'm the only one that signs my full name and my phone number. I'm not bucking the system. But I remember there was somebody that came and asked to get in a meeting one time. And they said, I have another problem, and I don't know if y'all want me in here. A lot of people think that man might have been gay. A lot of people think that man might have been a heroin addict. A lot of people think that man might have been a cross-dresser. You know what that man was? A convicted felon. And there was somebody in there that said, wonder what the master would do. And that man was welcomed into that meeting. And he never talked about anything else except helping somebody else. And the spiritual solution he found through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't ever know. So I just take that burden off of my group. We don't have to discuss that in group conscience. Charlie will sign them. He'll sign them. Shoot, he'll give you his old name and phone number. He don't care. Sometimes on Monday nights, I have the privilege to go to the Salvation Army. We take a meeting there. And one night, I mean, it was coming a frog strangler, folks. I mean, it was pouring down and been pouring down. And there was a guy out there. And I don't know how long it had been since a comb had seen his hair or his brush. I don't know when soap and clean water had touched his body. And the clothes he was wearing had been thrown away probably one or two times. But he was standing out there. And somebody beat that guy half to death. And yeah, the only way he knew to stop the pain was get him a bottle of Four Roses. Of course, he smelled like that. And the director of the Salvation Army wasn't going to let that guy in there. Now, we're not there to buck the system. We just want to bring a meeting in there. But we ask him, can he at least get in out of the rain? I mean, would that be all right? So they conceded, and they said, okay, you can come in, but you sit right over there in that corner, and don't you open your mouth. So he came over, and he sat down in the corner. And what's going on with the meeting? And the guy just couldn't quit crying. And finally we asked him, what is wrong, partner? What is wrong? And he said, they're trying to take my spoon. They're going to steal my spoon. Spoon? I got a drawer full of spoons. But it was his spoon. He probably found it. He might have stole it. But it was his spoon. And they were going to take it away from him. Four of us, since I'm single, four of us took that guy to my house. And he was able to shower as long as he wanted to because I don't run out of hot water. And I got clippers. And if you want to cut that beard off, you cut it off. If not, here's a blow dryer. You do whatever you want to, partner. And we took that pile of rags and we threw them in a trash can. And we had enough clothes for him to put something on, decent. And I'm a Harley rider. And I have got a drawer full of chrome polish. And we took that flit and we polished his spoon. We polished it where you could see yourself in it. And then we hugged him like he was somebody. And we hugged him like we were somebody. Never seen him since. But that's how, day by day, I establish and maintain a relationship with my Creator. And in December 2002, the worst of the worst can happen. I got this phone call. And they said, Scotty's boys flipped the Jeep Cherokee 8 times and he's dead. And I said, okay. And I hung up and I called David. I said, Scotty's dead, David, and I don't know what to do. And it takes me 30 minutes to get from my house to David's house on a good day. In 15 minutes, he was there. And his wife, Lucille, walked in and held my then wife and let her cry for 3.5 hours because I can't touch her. And I said, I don't know what to do, David. I don't know what to do. And you know what he told me? Nothing. Within 2 hours, my grand sponsor called. And he said, Charlie, I'll drive you to North Carolina. We'll stay up there as long as we have to. You don't have to go through this alone. Did he tell me what to do? He didn't say nothing. They were there. And that is what true sponsorship is, in my opinion. There's one common thread that exists between my sponsor, my grand sponsor, my great-grand sponsor, my great-great-grand sponsor, the guys that I sponsor, the guys that they sponsor, the guys that they sponsor, and the guys that they sponsor. We got one common thread. The lack of power. We don't know the answers. We go to the master and ask direction. But we make a vow to everybody that's in our family. Partner, I'll be there. And that's it. We're there. And I imagine that's what happens in the Misfits or Robber's Roost. You may not know the answer. But you don't have to do this alone, because we'll be there. So I went to North Carolina, and I walked in that ex-wife's house, and she sets this Easter basket up on the counter. And she said, you're going to need some of them, Charlie. I said, yeah, I know. But no. She said, you're going to need some, Charlie. And I said, yeah, I know. But I need God more. You see, God don't come in pill, powdered, or liquid form. Not anymore. And I went to that funeral home, and I took that, at that time, my 8-year chip, and I put it in Scotty Boy's hand. And I said, just take some of my sobriety with you, son. Because a whole lot of me died the day you died. I used to write stuff, and I'm not any good at any of it. But sometimes writing is kind of therapeutic to me. And I wrote this, and I showed it to David. And he said, that's good, Charlie. But finish it. If you want closure, finish it. I said, it's done. He said, no, it's not. Write that last verse, Charlie. and get closure. If you want to know what Charlie Yao used to be like, and what happened, and what Charlie Yao is like today, and how I have established a relationship with my Creator, from a dumb old Georgia redneck, this is it. It was late and dark one dreary night. He was riding in the rain, this young, restless outlaw that was aching with pain. And he slumped over his saddle seat, and he looked towards the sky and said, God, I just wish I'd die. And he was searching for a place to lay his weary head, and he unmounted his mount, and he unrolled his bed. And he was looking through the blackened sky, and he was searching through his mind. And he thought of all the broken hearts that he had left behind. Yeah, young, restless outlaw, you're living too fast. Think you better slow down. It's not going to last. Because you see, I've been through it all myself. But now that's all in the past. For the outlaw's reign is over. His trail's come to an end. You see, he's the kind of man that dies without a friend. He never has that starry night. And he never has that home. You see, the life of the outlaw's life is the same as my own. But times, they are changing. And this outlaw has been reborn. No longer fear and hate and resentment is his crown of thorns. It's love and peace and faith in the sunshine and the rain. For this old and wore-out outlaw has finally stop the pain. God bless, Alcoholics Anonymous. God bless.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.